his safari on. He had had a name, no doubt, some common name such as hangs as likely as not over scores of shops in London, but that had gone long ago, and nothing identified his memory now to distinguish it from the memories of all the other dead but Bwona Khubla, the name the Kikuyus gave him. There is no doubt that he was a fearful man, a man that was dreaded still for his personal force when his arm was no longer able to lift the kiboko, when all his men knew he was dying, and to this day, though, he is dead. Though his temper was embittered by malaria and the equatorial sun, nothing impaired his will, which remained a compulsive force to the very last, impressing itself upon all, and after the last, from what the Kikuyus say. The country must have had powerful laws that drove Bwona Khubla out, whatever country it was. On the morning of the day that they were to come to the camp of Bwona Khubla, all the porters came to the travellers' tents asking for dhow. Dhow is the white man's medicine that cures all evils. The nastier it tastes, the better it is. They wanted dhow this morning to keep away devils, for they were near the place where Bwona Khubla died. The travellers gave them quinine. By sunset they came to camp in Bwona Khubla and found water there. Had they not found water, many of them must have died, yet none felt any gratitude to the place. It seemed too ominous, too full of doom, too much harassed almost by unseen, irresistible things. And all the natives came again for dhow, as soon as the tents were pitched, to protect them from the last dreams of Bwona Khubla, which they say had stayed behind when the last safari left, taking Bwona Khubla's body back to the edge of civilization, to show to the white men there that they had not killed him, for the white men might not know that they durst not kill Bwona Khubla. And the travellers gave them more quinine, so much being bad for the nerves, and that night by the campfires there was no pleasant talk, all talking at once of meat they had eaten, and cattle that each one owned, but a gloomy silence hung by every fire and the little canvas shelters. They told the white men that Bwona Khubla's city, of which he had thought at the last, and where the natives believed he was once a king, of which he had raved till the loneliness rang with his raving, had settled down all about them, and they were afraid, for it was so strange a city, and wanted more dhow. And the two travellers gave them more quinine, for they saw real fear in their faces, and knew they might run away and leave them alone in that place, that they too had come to fear with an almost equal dread, though they knew not why. And as the night wore on, their feeling of boding deepened, although they had shared 3 bottles or so of champagne that they meant to keep for days when they killed a lion. This is the story that each of those 2 men tell, and which their porters corroborate. But then a Kikuyu will always say whatever he thinks is expected of him. The travellers were both in bed, and trying to sleep, but not able to do so, because of an ominous feeling. That mournfulest of all the cries of the wild, the hyena, like a damned soul lamenting, strangely enough, had ceased. The night wore on to the hour when Bwona Khubla had died 3 or 4 years ago, dreaming and raving of his city, and in the hush a sound softly arose, like a wind at first, then like the roar of beasts, then unmistakably the sound of motors, motors and motor buses. And then they saw, clearly and unmistakably, they say, in that lonely desolation where the equator comes up out of the forest and climbs over jagged hills, they say they saw London. There could have been no moon that night, but they say there was a multitude of stars. Mists had come rolling up at evening about the pinnacles of unexplored red peaks that clustered round the camp.